Welcome back, everybody, to the Eagle Boys. Today we have on Paul Bauer. He is an author, content creator, and lifestyle coach. We had a very nice conversation with him today about men's role in our society as well as masculinity of a man. And we are very excited to share this interview with you. Thank you all so much for watching.
From the clouds of the highest mountains, from the corners of the earth, two men have traveled leagues to bring you welcome to the Eagle Boys, Drew Ladd and Nick Huber. Overkill.
To get this started, I wanted to start with men's mental health. I feel like there's like a stigma around men's mental health. And I wanted to ask you, why do you think men are often hesitant to seek help for their mental health? Or do you even think that's a thing?
No, I do think that's a thing. I think men have this sort of paradigm of being a lone wolf, or that they can't go to other people, or they can't ask for help. That, or what a lot of men tend to do is, let's say they're in a relationship. Let's say they're even married. They tend to stop hanging out with their friends, like their male friends.
Right,
They start going all in with this girl that they're with. They end up getting married or whatever, and they make her their world, their universe. They have no one else they go to. They have no real friends outside of work. Like they have forced friends at work, you know.
That's such a good point.
People that they sort of hang out with at work, but they're not people that they're really close to that they could really share their problems with. So they come home and they think that their girl is the person to talk to. So they lay all their problems on their girl. Women don't care about men's struggles. They may want to care. They may even think that they care, but they're biologically not wired to really care about men's struggles. And that's what, when guys bring their problems to their girl, a lot of women basically start looking at the guy like he's weak, and she starts losing attraction.
That's
for him.
So true. Oh my gosh. You know, yeah. I've dated, I mean, I haven't dated like 1,000 women, but I've had my fair share of relationships. And that happens every single time. As soon as you start having issues or problems, I notice a pattern of all of a sudden there's a sudden disinterest. So I think that's a very good point that you made right there. And I just know that through, you know, personal experience.
Oh, you'll see it everywhere. Once you start studying this stuff, you see it everywhere. You see it in everyone's relationship. That's where I have a men's group. I call it the beer club. It's like $10 a month, right? And it's really just so you have a little bit of skin in the game. But there is about 50 guys in there. It's a very active Telegram community. And I created that group so that guys have a place to go to talk to the boys about stuff, right? Because their girl's not it. And the sad part is a lot of guys don't realize that. They tell their girl stuff. She starts losing attraction. And so they just start shutting down and they start bottling everything up because they're like, I don't have anyone to go to. I don't have anyone to go to.
You're like explaining my life story right now.
Oh my He's really getting at it. I love it right now.
So it's good for, I think, you know, I'm not a big fan of traditional therapy because the problem with modern therapy, one, I don't know if you guys know this, but was it last year? I think it was the American Psychological Association said that basically masculinity is toxic. It's a mental disorder. And the whole thing about therapists.
Wait,
is
who said that?
The American Psychological Association.
Oh my God. They turned woke. What are we going to do?
Right.
Unbelievable.
So the way they treat men is the same way they treat women. Women do very well in therapy about talking through their feelings, talking about their problems, and just sort of feeling how they feel about what they're talking about. Right. Men don't work the same way. Men do much better with action. They do much better with, there's therapists that are good and they'll give you action to take, but a lot of them, it's just, so how are you feeling? You know? And that really does nothing for men. We do much better with setting clear goals and taking action to fix problems, you know? So I recommend get with a group of like-minded guys that you can level up with, that will hold you accountable when you're messing up, that will be there for you when you're having problems and give you solutions when you need them.
That's exactly what I'm doing right now. I mean, with this podcast, at least, I mean, I have my best friends here, and I feel like I've kind of formed this group of men, and we're just kind of striving. I mean, we're doing a podcast. It's not like we're saving the world, but I feel like this is a place where we can come and share ideas.
Hey, we're spreading positivity.
We're spreading positivity. You know, yep.
Podcast is its own method of therapy, I swear.
I definitely agree with that. Totally agree with that, actually. Yeah. It's funny that you were saying, like, you know, that, you know, how traditional therapy, you're just not, you just don't think it works. I'm kind of on the same page. I don't think traditional therapy works. I've had more, like, breakthroughs mentally sitting at, like, a patio table outside with the boys.
Am I your therapist now?
Pretty much.
because men solve problems, right? Men solve problems. You bring a problem to a bunch of guys, immediately they go into brainstorming about it. Okay, how do we unmess up the situation for you, right? Why don't you try this? Have you tried that yet? Man, bro, you're messing up here. You got to try this, you know? Yeah. And then you're like, okay. And then if you actually care, you'll take some action on that, and you'll find that things start turning around, you know, or you'll at least feel better because you're doing something, you know, instead of just talking it out and not doing anything.
Exactly.
That ends up just being mental masturbation at some point. You
know? Really? Actually, that's the best way you can really put it at that point. It's mental masturbation, dude.
So yeah. Yes. I'm not going to disagree with that. So my next question is, so we talked about having friends and, you know, other men to confide in. What are some, you know, other steps that men can take to improve their mental and physical well-being in their life, or just their, even like their socioeconomic level or their purpose?
Oh, wait, those are a lot of different things.
That was a lot to put.
you really let him have it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things. One of the first things I recommend guys do is work on their physical fitness and their physical health. You'll find that going to the gym regularly, being more disciplined about the food you eat, and the better physique you start building, the better you're going to feel overall. And that actually just really goes into mental health as well. Then, like I already said, you know, get with the boys, get with a good coach, get with someone that you trust, get with a mentor of some kind. That's always good. I recommend the guys start really building a habit of cutting out news media, like mainstream news media. It's toxic as hell.
It's
does
all
nothing
BS
for
anyways,
you.
And yeah, it's all BS.
It's all fear-based nonsense. And you'll find when you cut that out, nothing that they talk about in the news really impacts your day-to-day life on a big scale. You won't even miss it. So instead of doing that, start listening to audiobooks, start reading actual books, start listening to more podcasts like yours, right? If just take that time to level up your mind a little bit, expand your horizon, start learning new things, you'll become a more well-rounded person. I love Audible, man. Like Audible is what, like 10, 15 bucks a month. And it's just effortless learning. I throw an audiobook on when I'm out jogging, when I'm at the gym, when I'm driving in my car, and I'm just constantly learning new things. And there's some books, like my Psychology Paradigm book that I recommend you listen to 10 to 15 times, because we only retain about 10% of what we read or listen to. So if you really want to, if you really want to absorb that information, you gotta listen to it on repeat. I have several books like that. A big one is How to Be a 3% Man by Corey Wayne. Can't recommend that book enough. But those are some things as far as more money or you're raising your economic status. I would say learn a skill of some kind. You've got to learn some kind of marketable skill. If you don't have it, you don't have to go to college. One of the things I talk about in my book is, you know, I was raised with the paradigm of you have to go to college. If you don't have a bachelor's degree, you're not going to be anything in this world. So I was operating on that paradigm. I actually went to school. I ended up getting two bachelor's degrees. And
what are your degrees in, if you don't mind me asking?
I have one in network security and one in computer networking.
Okay. I'll have my bachelor's in chemistry in like 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations. Thanks. Yeah. So I did that. because I was like, well, I'm going to get into IT. And I ended up, you know, being in IT for over 20 years. But the funny thing is once I actually started working in IT before I got the degrees because I knew somebody. And I got my foot in the door as sort of an intern and worked my way up. And by the time I got my bachelor's degree, I was already a systems engineer. And so I was like, man, I didn't even need these degrees to get that far. And then I know plenty of guys in the field that are, you know, C-level executives that never went to college. They just got their certifications and just have lots of experience. And when I was in the Navy, when I was getting out of the Navy, we did this thing called TAPS, right? Transition Assistance Program, where they teach you how to be a civilian again. And one of the guys in there was telling us at the time, you don't need to go to college. You guys have a lot of marketable experience just coming from the military. And I was like, that can't be true. My parents said I have to have a bachelor's degree. So I still went to college, still ran up, right, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in debt. It's all paid off now. But it was like, man, I could have saved so much money and not have gone into so much debt if I just didn't do that. So for guys out there, just to raise your economic status, I would say learn a skill, but you don't have to go to college to do that. You can go to a trade school. You could get certifications on your own. You can buy various certification books on Amazon for like $20, study for an exam, get a certification and start applying for internships and start working your way up that way. You don't even need college, but get a marketable skill in a at least a trade that pays well.
Yeah, I luckily got a full ride. That's the only reason why I went to college. I wouldn't have gone if I didn't have that. And I agree that I think most of the time it's probably a waste of your money. I mean, they make me take like classes, and I'm like, why am I taking Roman history when I, because they
it's
want
about
you to be
the experience and making you more well-rounded, right?
I disagree. I'm like, just give me, I'm trying to make a lot of money here. I don't need to know Roman history to work in my field. Like, I always was confused why colleges did that. I think it's a money grab and it rubs me
the wrong
way.
It's totally a money grab.
It's absolutely a money grab. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, in my book, I do say, you know, college is important if the career you want to go into requires it, right? Like it used to be, you could be an attorney without going to college. You just had to pass a bar exam, but a lot of states won't allow that anymore. You have to have a degree now before you can go and take the bar exam. So unfortunately, if you want to be a doctor, right, you have to go to college and be a doctor. There's no way around it.
Yeah, there's no way around that one.
But, you know, like, you know, if you want to get into, like I said, systems engineering or computer networking or just being a programmer, you don't need any of that stuff.
Yeah,
you
no.
Can I mean, you can take Python. A Udemy class for $50 and
Right. I mean, you can learn Python or I'm actually not sure what are the other popular.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I learned most of like, so Logic Pro X, use that all the time.
Yeah.
CapCut now, use that all the time. Mm-hmm. What else? Sublime Text, Python, all that stuff. I learned that just by playing around with it, you know?
Right.
I mean, I didn't, that's the way to do it. Like sometimes if you just like put in a few hours just to start learning something about a system that you need to
or anything
or want to, you can usually figure it out, at least get a good gist of what's going on in a couple of hours.
I know some guys, you mentioned CapCut. Yeah. I know some guys that they will go around to different content creators, different YouTubers, and say, hey, I'll make all your short form content for you. And they'll charge them like $50 a clip or something, right? And they will just use CapCut or they'll use AI tools like Opus Clip or something, right?
Exactly.
And they will edit it for them and then charge them $50 a pop or whatever, or even more.
Some of them
are charging way more than that. And it's just a side hustle. And they're just, and then they'll bill the guy, okay, here's, you know, we did 100 clips at $50 a pop. That's $500, you know? So, like people are doing that as side hustles now.
It's so crazy.
And we both learned how to do that just from, I mean, it took us so long.
It took us a minute to figure it out. But as soon as we did, cause like, for a while there, when we were getting started with this podcast, we were like, I see all these videos with like all these captions, and stuff like that. Who has time for that?
Right.
You know? And that's when I started seeing the people you're talking about that were like, yeah, $50 a video. And then they just throw it in Opus Clip, you know, and call it a day.
We should do that.
Well, we use Opus Clip now. That's what we use.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Okay. So once I found that out, I was like, oh, it's really not that hard.
You know how I figured it out? Because I was making my own clips. And then to save time, I actually hired one of those guys, a guy. He was a follower of mine. He's one of those Andrew Tate guys.
Oh,
the Hustlers University guys. And he was like, yeah, I'll make clips for you. And he was making really good clips for me. But then one day he sends me a clip that just seemed like it wasn't his normal style. It just seemed very sort of, you know, half-assed. And I was like, what AI tool did you use for this? And he goes, I used Opus Clip, bro. And shortly after that, I cut him out and started using Opus Clip.
Yeah, see, that's marketing fail 101. You let him know your secret.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Don't tell people how you did it if you want to keep making money.
I mean, to be fair, I would have kept using him. He was a good dude, but he just got so busy he couldn't meet deadlines anymore. And I was like, All right, I'm just gonna cut you out. I'm gonna go with Opus Clip.
I mean, it happens. People's lives change and stuff. I had more questions.
Yeah. So I was about to start with that.
Go for it.
So moving on. Thinking about, like, you know, modern times, masculinity and things like that. What would you consider to be, like, healthy masculinity in today's time? Is there, like, a certain, like, behavioral style that you think is most, like, healthy when it comes to masculinity or anything like that?
I don't know. Is there such a thing as unhealthy masculinity?
But that's, well,
the way that the question is phrased could
it could have been, I could have phrased that a little bit better. In a world where people see masculinity as toxic,
I just think those people are misguided. I don't think there's anything toxic about masculinity. In fact, you know, the people that cry about toxic masculinity are the first people that are going to call a cop when someone breaks into their house. And guess who's going to come? The most toxic masculine cop you've ever seen. The guy who broke into your house. You want masculine men. You need, the world needs masculine men. The world was built by masculine men. So I don't like to put any positive or negative categories on masculinity. I do like to say that there's assholes out there, right? There's jerks out there, sure, but I don't think masculinity has anything to do with it. It's the same thing with the difference between feminists and being feminine, right? There's, like, a lot of the feminists aren't acting feminine. There's nothing inherently wrong with someone being feminine, you know, unless you're a man, then you need to be more masculine.
There you go.
I got
you.
Unless
you're of a certain persuasion, then, you know, we're not allowed to judge anymore.
Exactly.
It's a new millennium. But
why do you think it's gone in this direction where masculinity is now? Because I have my own thoughts on this, but I wanted to hear from you. Why do you think there's this negativity towards masculinity?
Well, it's been an interesting dynamic. There's a really good book that I highly recommend called No More Mr. Nice Guy by Dr. Robert Glover. And he really breaks it down well. He basically asserts that we're going on several generations now of what he calls nice guys, right? Nice guy syndrome. And it all started at the end of World War II, when we moved from an agrarian society to more of a industrial society. People moved out of the countryside. Boys stopped having that positive masculine influence from their dads, their uncles, their grandpas, because now dad, uncle, and grandpa is at the factory working 17-hour days. And so boys are now raised almost 100% exclusively by women now. So boys are raised, you know, by mothers. If a lot of moms are working now too, so they're raised by female babysitters. A vast majority of schools, the teachers are women. So these boys just have no masculine influence at all, which has created this epidemic of weak men, you know? So we've just gone through just decades of weak men and men not really learning how to communicate properly, how to be assertive, how to have emotional durability, all that kind of stuff. We're taught to be more soft, you know, be more vulnerable, like all this kind of stuff. And it's just really making men weaker. And then women are wondering where all the good men are. It's just creating this compound problem. There's another book out there called Boy Crisis by Dr. Warren Farrell. That's a really good book too. It addresses the masculinity crisis that we're having. And but his recommendations in that is to double down on what got us there, right? Oh, be more accommodating to these men, be more sensitive to them, you know. And it's like, so don't teach them how to be men, is what you're saying.
It's weird, right? Though, because as soon as you try to do that, it's like your woman doesn't want to sleep with you anymore. Your friends think that you're weak. You're, you know, it's like everyone attacks you as soon as you try to come out with, you know, how you feel. Or, I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, certain things you can say, where that wouldn't happen. But once you get to the point of you're like, where you're emotionally dumping on people as a man, it then becomes this problem where you feel like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Like,
see, that's why I keep to myself.
Hold on, they lied to me.
That's why I keep to myself sometimes about like what's going on, because I feel like I'll get into it and like I'll just be like, even 10, 15 minutes in to like what's going on, I'll just think to myself, oh, dude, these guys have no interest in what I'm talking about right now. Like, they don't want to hear it. Like, I'm just going to cut it off right there.
And I did say, like your friends will think you're weak. I kind of want to take that back, because if you have good friends, then
if you have real good friends, they're not going
to
think you're
weak. Right, then they're going to listen to you. But I mean, in general, you kind of get this feeling.
Yeah, in general, like, people don't care. And really, I think inherently, over thousands of years of human evolution, we're conditioned that way. We're conditioned that men are supposed to be a little more stoic and have emotional control, and women are allowed to be more emotional. And so when guys are acting more emotional, they're typically like, our monkey brains are like, you're acting like a woman right now. Quit being a little, you know, a little baby.
What are you, soft or something? You know?
Yeah, you soft.
You soft or something?
Oh gosh.
Oh, that's so great.
So yeah, it's actually good though, for men to learn that, to learn a little more emotional durability, a little more emotional control. If you do find yourself bringing problems to people, it's good to throw a solution behind it, right? Like, right. It's, you know what? I've got all these things going on, but you know what? I got it worked out. I got a plan to move forward. And if you don't have a plan, like I said, get a good group of boys that you can go to and say, hey guys, I got this problem, but you know, maybe you can help me find a solution for it. People are, I think, are more apt to listen to you if you're not just pissing and moaning and complaining. If you're actually solution oriented, you know?
Yeah. No one really likes a whiner.
So do you think that it becomes unrealistic at some point to always be stoic, to always, you know, hide vulnerability? Do you think it's kind of unrealistic for men to be that all the time?
Yeah, it is unrealistic. And that's why I can't stress it enough. You got to find a good group of dudes to hang out with. Like, that's the big number one thing that I preach. That's one of the things, in psychology paradigm that I talk about a lot, is that it is absolutely unrealistic. We're human. We have emotions. You can't suppress them. And no one in the red pill space talks about suppressing emotions. It's about controlling them and saving for the right time and place. You know, you got to have good outlets. If you're pissed off and angry, great outlet for that is to go to the gym, you know, or go to take it out on a heavy bag or something like that. That's a good outlet for that. But blowing up and laying into people and losing your cool and yelling at people, that's not a good outlet for that.
Right. And, you know? and I think that, a lot of people might take what, you know, we're talking about and say, oh, they're supporting toxic masculinity. They support, you know, domestic violence or like whatever it is. But really, we're trying to say that there's a way to be masculine, that benefits society and everyone around you. And has nothing to do with these extremes that are kind of surrounded with the term toxic masculinity, which I think is absurd. I hate that word. I hate even saying it.
Dude, I'm right there with you.
I prefer it's conventional masculinity. That's one of the things that we're talking about in the Essential Skills of a Masculine Presence series, is we're trying to teach men conventional masculinity. And we're not trying to suppress people's emotions. Cause if you do constantly suppress that, that's where a lot of guys, they feel like they have nowhere to go. They have nowhere out, and they end up unaliving themselves. Right. That's not what we're talking about at all. What we do say though, is that there's a time and a place for it. Your girl is not the time or the place, right? She does not care about those struggles. So she's not a good outlet for that. So you got to find the right outlet. You
Do you
know?
Think all women are like that?
I think, yes, I think inherently they are to some degree. You might go to your girl with your problems and she might be accepting of it on a, you know, a little bit, but if you keep doing it, it will erode eventually. Yeah, absolutely.
That's so, a hard truth to hear from a lot of guys, I'm sure. That's yeah, a hard
so
truth.
So one thing I tell guys is, you know, your girl's not it, but you're going to make a mistake. You're going to tell her about your day. You're going to tell her about all the nonsense you went through the day. As long as you put a positive spin at the end of it, it's fine. She'll be like, okay, cool. You got your stuff taken care of. Cause that's all she wants. She wants you to be her rock. It doesn't work the other way around. You know, she wants you to be there for her to emotionally dump on and you just stand there being unaffected by her emotions.
You just got the shield up and you're just like, all right, bring it on.
This question just hit me. How do you feel about the woman being the breadwinner?
How do I feel about that?
Yeah. Like, what do you think about women being the breadwinner? Do you think that's an okay dynamic in a relationship?
It's actually becoming quite a thing now. Yeah. There's a lot of women that are making a lot more money now. So this is what I say to that. It's not a problem if the guy doesn't make it a problem.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good way to say it. I like that.
Because that's where it really comes in. Guys start getting really insecure about not making enough money. They start making a sort of a big deal about it. And then their girls start complaining like, why aren't you, I'm the major breadwinner here and you ain't pulling your weight around here. And, you know, and then the guys just feel even more dejected because their woman's, you know, berating them for not being a man. It's like,
that's rough.
No, if your girl makes more money, you just need to set the tone and lead in your relationship. That's your job. So it doesn't matter how much money she makes. It doesn't matter how much money you make. You set the tone and lead that relationship. And when she comes home from work, especially if she's a, you know, boss babe that makes, you know, makes all a million decisions every day, the last thing women want to do when they come home is be in their masculine making decisions. So if she comes home and you have things planned out and you're like, hey, I'm taking you to dinner tonight, go get your fancy shoes, you know, and she doesn't have to think about it. She can now relax into her feminine. It's not going to matter that she makes more money than you because you're managing that relationship.
So I've dated a few women that make more money than me because,
oh yeah.
Well,
so have I.
I'm 26, but I've dated some women that are like 32, 33. And, you know, obviously they have almost 10 years on me. They're, you know, way, you know,
cougars are like that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah.
But I feel like there's, been kind of like a heart, like when that does happen, there's like a struggle and like the power dynamic in a relationship. It's like the woman almost feels like she has a hard time switching from being the boss to then talking to me and then lowering that. You know what I mean? I don't know why that happens every time. And I'm like,
well, that happens when you let it happen. Right. So there, one of the big things that I teach men. So what I do now is I coach men in their relationships, guys, especially guys that are in a dead bedroom situation. Guys where they've been married 20 years, their wife doesn't touch them anymore. You know, it's just
a terrible
situation, oh right? God. But the big reason why it gets to that point is because there's this thing we call the betatization process. It's like a 5-step process. And women start in it right away from the beginning of a relationship. And what they do is they start doing what we call frame checks or shit testing or congruency testing. Lots of different terms for it, but it's the same thing. And basically, they will sort of test your integrity as a man and see how much they can get away with. And
oh, that's so true.
And if you know how to handle that, then she maintains respect for you. You understand? A lot of that comes down to not taking anything she says seriously.
He's not wrong.
It's a big thing, right? If she's like being emotional and being bitchy with you and you just sort of chuckle at her and go, you're so cute when you're mad.
Dude, I've done that so many times and they always get mad. I ain't gonna lie.
No, they will. No. Sometimes they'll get even more mad, but when they realize that you're completely unaffected by their tantrums, they will come back around like within 30 minutes and just like cuddle up in your lap because you've passed their test, right? They've tested you and you stood firm. And they now have more respect for you. So if you, I like my two favorite things to do when it comes to handling these types of tests is agree and amplify and act indifferent, right? So agree and amplify is, It's where they sort of playfully tease you, or they call you a, you know, sort of a playful name or whatever, and you just take that, you agree with them, and then take it up a notch to a, like an absurd level, right? So a good one is when you're out dating and a girl goes, "Aren't you kind of short?" Right? Oh, like, like if you ever watched Star Wars, the first Star Wars, when Princess Leia goes, "Aren't you a little short to be a stormtrooper?"
Oh shit!
Right. That's a classic shit test.
I actually watched that movie.
Yeah, that's a classic shit test. A good way for Luke to respond to that is like, "Actually, I was thinking about trying out for the circus because I think I would be a perfectly good midget." Right? Like you're agreeing with her, and then you're taking it up to an absurd level. Like I'm a midget now. Like. You know, you're not taking what she says seriously. You're not being emotionally impacted about it. You're not, you know, reacting to her with your own emotional reaction. And so when you start doing that, you start practicing with that with women, it completely changes the dynamic. So if they are boss women and they come home and they're bossing you around and you go,
that ain't how this works.
We're not doing that. We're doing my thing. And then you slap her on the ass or whatever. And you just, you know, you just don't take whatever she says seriously.
I feel like you're like painting a whole picture for me right now. And I'm like,
it's the greatest picture I've ever seen.
This is $1 million painting here.
It's fascinating watching guys. Like I said, I have a community of guys in my beer club, right? And there's 50 dudes in there, and most of them have been following my podcast for years now. And I've seen some of these guys from the beginning when they first started watching my show to now leading these like really amazing relationships. And this is how the dynamic is, and their women love it. They love that they can't, you know, take control of the situation. They love that their man has everything under control, and they just are allowed to be women now. And it's just a natural instinct for them. And now they're just like, wow, you know, this is the best relationship I ever had. And
do you think because I've actually done this personally, do you think you should tell a woman like, "Hey, I got this. You can just turn your brain off. It's all good."
Yeah.
I feel like I've done that. I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing, but I've told, you know, women in the past, like, "Hey, I got it. Like, you don't have to do anything. Like, you can just
That's actually good. Yeah. No, okay. That's perfect. One thing I tell guys when they're out dating, a big shit test women will do is they'll try to change the plans on you last minute, right? So my current girlfriend, who I've been with for about 4 years now, she did that. But by this time, I'd already been dating a lot, spinning plates. And so I'd seen it all before. So what we did was we had a coffee date set up. And I don't typically recommend coffee dates just because that puts out the friend vibe. But she was working working graveyard shifts as a labor and delivery nurse. And so we had to do a coffee date, and I was like, "Okay, cool. Meet me at the Starbucks at, you know, 12 p.m. on Sunday." And she goes, "Okay." And then the day before, she goes, "You know, I was thinking maybe because of all the mask situation," because there was still mask stuff going on 4 years ago. She's like, "Maybe with all the mask stuff, maybe we meet in the park instead, and I'll swing by and I'll bring it over to the park." And I go, "No, we're going to meet at the coffee shop just like we planned. I'll see you there tomorrow." And she goes, "Okay, sounds good."
Sweet. Yeah.
And then after we had dated for a little while, she goes, you know, when you told me no, we're gonna stick with the plan," she was like, "I don't know why, but I was like, I like this guy.
Ready to go." Yeah, she was good.
Yeah, you got her going with that one. Yeah. Dude, that's great.
I'm all about
it. It was just
that.
Because I wouldn't let her have her way. You know, I was like, "No, these are my plans, we're sticking with them." She's like, "Oh, okay."
And it's weird. It's because you think being polite and wanting to work with someone on something would be the right thing to do. But it's like, why? Like, their brains are wired to not want that. They're like, "No, I want someone who's going to tell me no and go ahead and take the initiative and, you know, stick to what they said." And right. I think that's where a lot of men get, you know, confused, because they're like, "Well, wait, should I be nice and try to work with her on this, or should I stand my ground?" It's like, what do I do here? Because then they're afraid of losing her if they don't stand, or if they do stand their ground, they're like, "Oh, then maybe she won't even want to talk to me." But my thought is, if she does leave you when you stand your ground, then you probably didn't want her in the first place.
Yeah, you probably didn't even want her anyway. I wouldn't have.
Well, Well, that, yeah, that, so that goes back to nice guy syndrome. A lot of us are raised to be overly accommodating, you know, happy wife, happy life. We're raised to do everything to tiptoe around women and walk on eggshells so that they don't get mad.
And I know this, right? And I still do it. I still make these mistakes and I can't help it. I'm like, wait, she's so pretty. What do I do?
What do I do?
That's because it's a deeply held paradigm, right? And then guys are afraid to lose her. They're like, oh my God, if I say one wrong thing, I might lose her. And that's where guys develop a scarcity mentality.
Right. Okay.
When it comes to dating. That's why in my first book, I recommend guys spin plates, which means date multiple women at once. Right. And you do that, even if your ultimate goal is to get into an exclusive relationship, you still spin plates because you know why? Men call it spinning plates. Women just call it dating. Women do that. Women, that's how women naturally date. When you're out dating and you just meet a girl, you're an option for her.
Oh, they're screaming.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, don't believe that this girl is talking to just you. Any girl tells you that, they are lying.
Well, they have to screen you. It's just natural. They have to screen you for everything that they can think of. And
they're
trying to find their best option.
Yeah. Right. They're trying to find their best possible option. That's how they're hypergamous, right? They're trying to find the best possible option for them.
Why do you think men aren't like that?
Men are polygamous. Men aren't hypergamous. We're polygamous. It means we want to have sex with everything. We want, any chick out there.
Way to put me on the spot here.
we want to have them all, right?
But yeah, that's
true. Women are looking to consolidate on one guy if possible. And women are looking for what alpha traits and beta traits in men, right? Alpha traits are like the sexually attractive, exciting traits. And then the beta traits are the comfort stuff, he gives me flowers and chocolates and tells me I'm pretty and, you know, that kind of stuff, right? They want both, but if you are too much of a beta guy that's always doing nice things, always accommodating, putting her on a pedestal, she's not going to bang you. She's going to go bang Chad, who does none of those things, right?
Thank God somebody else thinks that. Jesus Christ.
Well, it's true. It's just science.
Willow's over here laughing.
Yeah, it's fact. It's evolutionary psychology, right? So if you want to be a guy that's going to maintain a healthy relationship for the long term, you have to optimize those alpha traits to make sure you don't end up in a dead bedroom, but you still want to sprinkle a little beta on it, you know, like Salt Bay. sprinkle a little beta on it so that it creates that comfort feeling for her that she still needs in that relationship, and you're going to have a great relationship. But yeah, what was the original thing we were talking about? Oh, we were talking about nice guys and being overly
nice.
How often do you think you should sprinkle in the beta behavior?
I think it just depends on the situation. There's a really good book for married men out there called The Married Man Sex Life Primer by Athel K. Came out in 2011. And one of the things that he recommends guys do who are in committed relationships is to secretly track your girl's ovulation cycle.
Oh my God.
He's like, just keep track of it. He calls it ovulation game, right? Because he's like, based on the time of the month, she's going to need different traits from you, right? If she's not feeling well because she's PMSing and all that kind of stuff, you're going to need to be a little more beta during that time. You need to go, understand her feelings a little bit more. But when she's ovulating, it's alpha time. She wants to fuck, you know what I mean? Yeah.
that's actually a genius idea.
That's a good idea. Wow. I feel like I've already learned like five things.
That's freaking genius.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I feel like I should be paying for this right now.
it's a really smart way to get to go about doing, I mean, really strategic way of going about doing stuff, right? Understanding what her needs really are. You don't have to go that far. I mean, if you're just perceptive and you like listen to what your girl's doing and you know, just pay attention, you're going to be fine. You don't need to go through all that stuff, you know, just be a little more discerning and stuff like that. But most guys aren't listening to the girl. Most girls are talking and they're tuning her out, going,
just
thinking about
one out the other.
What am I going to wear tomorrow? Like what was going on that football game the other day? Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. You're just going, uh-huh. Yeah, sure, honey. Right. Not paying attention. Well, I used to do that, but now I've learned that, I've learned to be more present with my girl. And so I try to actively listen 80% of the time and only do 20% of the talking. It's kind of hard because my girl doesn't talk very much, but you know, most guys would look at that like a blessing.
I mean, shit, there are dudes out there that definitely would.
Yeah. I mean, I feel you like know? I have to be able to talk to someone and have them understand what I'm saying and give something back. I don't think I could, you know,
that's the thing. It's funny you say that because I was talking to this girl. I don't really even know if I am anymore, but like she was just never present in any of our conversations. I couldn't get a word out of her. It was the craziest thing. And just like after a while, I was just like, dude, talking to her is like talking to a brick wall.
Was she like on her phone?
No. Like this was not only over texting, but over the phone.
Oh, I see.
You know, I can't even get a word out to you. Girl, you called me and yeah. I can't even get a word at you.
Do you think that in that case you're kind of just being like used as like an emotional tampon?
That's kind of what I was getting at, and what's going to segue to my next question. I guess we've kind of been covering it a little bit, but like, what do you think is the biggest mistake nowadays that men are making in the dating world?
So I actually have a whole dating course for men. I think a lot of guys think that dating apps don't work, but I just think that most guys don't understand how to use dating apps. You know what I mean? I think if we're going to talk about that specifically, their pictures suck. You know, most guys' pictures are trash. If they just spent a day and put some effort into it, I actually recommend guys pay for professional photos, right? And there's like six specific photos that I recommend guys get. And then they need to keep their bios small and positive and upbeat. There's the method that what I used to put in my bio would actually sort of pre-qualify women. I would actually set the frame from the beginning that I was just out seeing what was available, looking for the right woman to join me, right? That sets the frame that she's joining me and my lifestyle, you know, and that my ideal woman is this, this, and this. Is that you? That's basically making her qualify herself to me, right? But most guys are out there trying to make girls like them. Most guys are out there doing whatever they can, hoping that this girl likes them. It's like, no, you've got to have the mindset of I'm the prize and I'm interviewing for the job of girlfriend, you know? And then you go on every date just seeing if you're going to like her or not. That's like, I used to look at first dates like it's a chemistry test. And another big thing
that's
that
how
guys,
I should do it. I would ace it every time.
Yeah.
Because I'm a chemist.
Well, if you go looking for a chemistry test and you're not looking to like hook up or make her your girlfriend, or you basically let go of all attachment to outcome and you're just going there to have fun to see if you like her or not. And if you don't like her, okay, cool. It's like drinks only. It's over after one drink. That's another thing too. Guys immediately try to impress girls with their money, so they'll like, oh, let me take you to a steak dinner. Like, no, they got to earn that.
Oh
kind
my
of stuff,
gosh,
right?
I've made that mistake
so many times.
Oh,
dude.
Every guy has.
Oh
every
my
guy has.
So many times I've made that mistake.
It's only worked like twice. Like
it's never worked for me. If I'm being quite honest with you, it's never worked.
It's done it like not that often for me, like at all. Usually it's like, oh, I just blew $80 and I'm never going to talk to you again. Cool. Oh, wait.
And girls
are
happy to take advantage of that. Girls are happy to take advantage.
Right, exactly. I actually kind of want to tell you a funny story. So,
Actually, I think I know which one you're about to tell them. Yeah.
So, I was going to the gym.
Oh, yeah.
So, I was walking to the gym, and there was this girl, and she was trying to get money donated. She was trying to raise money for kids, for like backpacks and stuff. And I walk in, and she says hi to me. I was kind of in a bad mood, so I was just like, hi, and I kept walking. Well, I got my workout in and I, you know, my blood was pumping. I felt good and I was walking back out. She said something else to me and I looked at her and I was like, oh, she's actually really pretty. So I walked up to her and I was like, hey, like, you know, I'll give you $5. And then we had like a short conversation. And then I told her, I was like, hey, I'll give you $10 if you give me your number. And she was like, make it 15 and you got a deal.
She hustled him. Hustled his ass.
I was like, wow. Why am I doing this? This is like the biggest mistake that I, like, I'm 26. I should know not to do this. And I was like, okay, fine. So I got her number and we had a date scheduled for Sunday. And she was like, hey, I'm sorry. I'm really busy. I can't go.
Yep.
And then I was like, oh my God, I just lost $15 for no reason.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's bad. Yeah, a lot of guys I say lead with their wallets, right? They're trying to impress women by how much money they make. And then they wonder why they attracted gold diggers, right? It's like, if you lead with your wallet, you're going to attract gold diggers. So I recommend keeping initial dates low investment and make these women earn more expensive dates by their investment level. They got to show some investment in you in order to go on the more expensive fun dates, right? The last thing I'll say that I think guys really have a big problem with is they don't keep texting and phone calls for logistics. Like, texting and phone calls need to be for logistics only, but a lot of guys are like, if I don't text her every day, she's going to forget about me. Like, women aren't retarded, right? Like, they're not going to forget about you. Especially if you make a good impression on them, right? But what do 97% of guys do? They text them all the time. They call them all the time. They're, you know, sending them memes and stuff just all the time, telling them a play-by-play of their day. Like, hey, I just ate a ham sandwich. What are you up to? Right? All that kind of stuff. The guys that are really good with women don't do any of that stuff. And so these women, when they meet a guy who doesn't do any of that stuff, and she's seeing like four or five other dudes or talking to four or five other dudes, she's texting with all these other guys, but then she's wondering, what's up with this guy?
Like, why isn't he said anything?
Yeah, we just had this conversation. That's so true.
Why isn't this guy doing that, right? And so when they're thinking about why isn't this guy doing that, who are they thinking about? They're thinking about the guy that's not doing it. They don't care about all this other stuff. That's all just noise to them. But now they're curious. All these other guys are putting me on a pedestal. This guy's not. He's different. What's his story, right? Now they're invested. So if guys just kept texting and phone calls to like setting dates and then getting the hell off the phone, like, you don't want to spend more than, you know, I would say when you're on a dating app, you want to banter back and forth no more than like 10 or 15 messages before finding a segue to set a date, right? And then once you set that date, get the hell off the app. And then you don't want to set a date more than 3 days out, because the further out you set it, the higher the flake rate goes up.
That's exactly what I do. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
I told Nick this. I only have one dating app. I used to have more when I was younger. But the volume of women, I think I get like an average amount of matches, maybe like 10 a week or something, like not that many. But even though I get that amount, because I know some men get, you know, zero, like that happens a lot and it's sad.
Right here.
but like I tell him, I'm like, it doesn't matter the amount of matches that you get. You still have to handle it properly. And a lot of times people just aren't women just are on there for, you know, attention in the first place. So even if you get 10 matches a week, maybe one of them will set a date with you and she might not even show up. And it's still a struggle. So there's multiple like layers to it. Even though you're getting matches and you're making connections, you still have to follow through and, you know, behave, you know, correctly to get a date.
It's like a sales funnel, really.
that's a good way to say it.
What part of the country are you guys in?
We live in Ohio. We're near Cincinnati.
Near Cincinnati. Are you like a smaller town?
We're like medium sized.
We're like gentrifying and like getting a little bigger, but we were a pretty small town for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a dating course, right? I call it No Cold Approach in the Cow Pasture, because I live out in the middle of nowhere. I live out in rural Colorado in ranch country.
I'm already jealous.
And so when I was out dating, there was no places to organically meet women, because it's so far spread out here. And when you do go to the bars, it's almost always like elderly people and, you know, old drunk miners and stuff like that. And I'm talking about like coal miners, right?
Real out there.
Yeah. And so the only way to meet women is online. And so I found that dating apps and social media are like the best places to meet women out here. So I had to get really good at it in order to get as many dates as I got. But yeah, you're not gonna get every one of them. There's a lot of women that are just on the dating apps, just seeking validation. There's women that are on dating apps and they treat dating apps just like some people play Candy Crush. You know, they have no intention of ever meeting up. They just want someone to chat with. You know, and so one of the things that I teach guys is how to cut those women off quickly. You know, and that's where if you only go, you know, 10, 15 messages and then set a date, and she's like, gives you a million reasons under the sun why she can't go on a date, she's a time waster. And so you got to just, you got to unmatch her and move on to the next chick. And it's a numbers game at that point, right? It's all about being efficient and going with women that are showing interest in you. And, you know, it can be fun if you get strategic about it and start playing the game, you know, but a lot of guys don't. They'll swipe on the app, they'll get, you know, 10 matches, and then they'll find one girl that's showing high interest and they'll let the other girls go, and they'll just go all in on the one girl and start sniper dating the one chick. And then when she ghosts them, their world's over, you know. It's like, no.
That's literally what happens to me. That's so true. That happens to me. I feel like at one point I'll be dating like three women, and then I'll like one and I'll start talking to her and I'll kind of forget about the other ones. And then she's gone and it's like, oh, I got to start all over. It's like an endless cycle. Like, what's going on here?
I could see this being like sort of like a thing like where you don't want to go sulking back to the other ones. Like, that's the mentality, is you don't want to go back to the other ones.
That's why you never let them go. You keep them on the hook. You keep texting them. You keep dating all of them, right? You actually go out in all of them, and then you let the plates fall as they may, right? You might actually have, eventually, you might have a couple of girls that all want to lock you down. That's the goal. You don't want to be locking any of the girls down. You need to wait till they lock you down. That's using hypergamy to your advantage, because if a guy's pushing for a relationship for whatever, because it's not natural to women and their evolutionary psychology, it gives them the ick. You know, they're like, why is this guy so wanting a relationship so bad? That's just weird to me, right?
I've made that mistake so many times. I've done that, and I feel gross about it. I'll be in my car one day and I'll be like, oh, I can't believe
just
I did
thinking
that.
About it while like, you're no, driving.
Why did I do that?
I was that way too. It was one of the things I had to learn. So I found okay, cool. I'm just going to keep spinning plates, going out with all these different women until one of them brings up exclusivity. If I like her and I want to be exclusive with her, cool, let's go for it. If I don't, I'll just tell her, hey, no, I kind of like where things are right now. I don't want to be tied down. Right. And then you have to be okay with letting them go, because if you tell them that and they're not okay with it, they're going to leave. That's okay. Like, there's always another woman, you know? So you got to have the abundance mentality when it comes to the women. There's 4 billion women on the planet. There really is always another woman. So there's no reason to be afraid of letting one go, because the ones that are really going to show investment, they're not going to go anywhere. They're actually going to step up their game, especially if they think that you're seeing other women. That actually works to your advantage. Women like guys that other women like. It's called,
it's very true as well.
Yeah. What's that term called? It's mate choice copying. I can't think of what it's called.
There is a term for it, and I can't think of it. I don't know it either. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Alpha Male Strategies?
Yes.
It's a YouTube channel. I watched him, and I got a lot of my dating advice from him in my earlier 20s. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of touching on, this is a lot of stuff that I forgot about. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember hearing that at one point.
I did start watching him because you put me on to him. I remember that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
he and I have the same mentor. He learned a lot of his stuff from Coach Corey Wayne. And you know, so we're all 3% brothers. We all read Corey Wayne's book, How to Be a 3% Man.
Have you talked to him?
To Alpha Male Strategies?
Yeah.
No, I've never talked to him. And haven't talked to Corey. I've talked to Dr. Robert Glover and Rollo Tomasi and a bunch of other guys, Rich Cooper and stuff like that. But
very nice.
Yeah, haven't been able to talk to. I haven't really. I know friends of Alpha Male Strategies though, so I probably could get that arranged. I just haven't thought about it.
I feel like that'd be a dope collaboration.
I would love to talk to him myself. Honestly, I was listening to him for a while. But yeah, are there other books that you would recommend other than your own? And I know you mentioned another one, actually. I can't remember the name of it. Are there any other books you would?
Yeah, I mentioned a whole bunch of books today. I'm a book dropper. I'd like to drop books that I've read. So when it comes to dating and relationships, my holy trinity of books is How to Be a 3% Man by Coach Corey Wayne. Dating Essentials for Men by Dr. Robert Glover. It's a phenomenal book. And then Atomic Attraction by Christopher Canwell. When I was trying to get better with women, just my backstory, right? I was married for 15 years. I grew up in a small town in Colorado. I was always pretty good with women, but I was always had that sniper mentality. I was only going for one girl at a time, and every girl I was like, I'm going to marry this girl, right? So I was always running for that white picket fence. I joined the military. My second year in the military, I got married, and I rushed into that. I basically knew this girl for less than a year. We lived together for like 3 months, and then we eloped, right? Just bad, bad idea. We ended up staying together for 14 years after that. We have two kids together, and then she filed for divorce. And when she filed for divorce, I was 50 pounds overweight, hadn't dated in 15 years, didn't know what the hell I was doing, floundered around on the dating circuit for like 11 months until some chubby chaser took pity on me. Ended up in a relationship with that chick for 4.5 years. And during that time, I lost all the weight, got fit.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you. And then, but I never learned how to maintain relationships. I never understood the dynamics of attraction and all that kind of stuff. So that relationship ended after 4.5 years. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Right. But because I was in shape now, all of a sudden I was like getting dates, like no problem. It was, you know, like shooting fish in a barrel, but I couldn't keep women around longer than like 2 or 3 dates. So I was like, what the hell am I doing wrong here? I'm like repelling women. Like the two most important relationships in my life failed, and now I can't keep women around. What am I doing wrong? And so that's when I really started diving into this stuff. And that's when I started listening to How to Be 3% Man, Atomic Attraction, and Dating Essentials for Men. I listened to those books on repeat.
That's how I found you, is because the same thing is happening to me right now. And I was just kind of, you know, researching, and and that's how I found you. And I was like, oh, this guy is actually, you know, he's speaking on a lot of things that I've, you know, heard before from other people. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. So I've watched a couple, you know, of your videos. And I wonder, why is it, do you ever think it's a bad thing that women, get like kind of standoffish when you try to make them like the only, you're like, I want to marry you, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that we should just accept that? Or do you think it's something that can be worked around?
Yeah, no, I think we should accept it. That's mm-hmm. their nature, right? So, so on social media, my handle is, you know, hypergamy strategist, right? That's my official title. That's, I love saying, using women's hypergamy to their advantage, right? Because you're basically using their evolutionary psychology and understanding how it works, and then strategically using that, right? And the thing is that another mentor of mine in the space, his name is Rollo Tomasi. He wrote the Rational Male book series. He says women, they like playing the game. They don't want to know they're playing the game, but they want you to play the game with them. So as long as you understand the game, you're going to be more attractive to them, because you're going to naturally know how things work, and they're going to be like, oh, this guy just gets it.
You know? That's very smart.
And that's how women just inherently want men who get it. And that's why communication is, you know, they say communication is so important in relationships. It's not. I mean, communication is good for conflict resolution, but when it comes to relationships and you explaining to your girl, you know, hey, you're not giving me the sex, right? And she's like, you know, what can I do to get the sex? Well, she has to tell you what to do to get the sex. You're not the guy.
That's because, a bad move. Yeah.
Because a Chad knows how to get the sex, right? A guy who's naturally charismatic knows how to get sex out of her. And so that's what she wants. She wants a guy that just knows how to seduce her and get her and push her buttons and stuff like that. So if you understand that stuff and just work with it, you can actually have really healthy relationships. You just got to wait until they lock you down.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, honestly,
and you got to be their best possible option, and you're more likely going to be locked down.
So it's basically just like a waiting game and like holding in your own instincts and like desires until you're like, okay, I got this. We're all good. I can kind of relax a little bit. And like, it's weird. Why do we have to think, like, as men, why do we have to think about this stuff so much? And women are just like chilling. Like, they don't even have to.
They're straight up chilling, dude.
It's because men love idealistically and women love opportunistically. So men are the real romantics. We're the ones that are really like, oh, I'm going to be the Prince Charming and I'm going to rescue the princess and we're going to ride off into the sunset and she's going to love me forever. And women are like, how much money has this guy got? You know, like, you know what I mean? So
he's like, not wrong at all.
I've had some women tell me though, that like, they don't care about money. I'm like, yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Don't lie to me.
They do at some level. Right. But you can weed out the women who are only looking for money by, you know, keeping dates low investment and then making sure that they like you for you before you start, you know, taking them on the fancy stuff. And that's where you can really test a woman or test women for their interest level. Most guys aren't testing women. Most guys are just going with the first girl that's nice to them. But women are testing us constantly, well, either consciously or subconsciously. So it's like we might as well issue some tests for them to test to see, you know, what their interest level is and you know, if they're a good fit for us. But most guys don't do that.
I think it's a good way to guard yourself against being used. I mean, I've been, and I hate to say it like this because it sounds a little hateful, but I feel like I've been used so many times in one way or another. I mean, sexually maybe like two times, like not that often it's happened that way. But yeah,
that's
a
good problem to have.
Like, yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Right. Now. Well, no, that's actually happened to me. We're like, I really like a girl. And then she slept with me and I didn't hear from her again. I'm like, did I do a bad job? Like what happened? But,
that's naturally where I go to.
Yeah.
That's naturally where I go to. I'm like, did I suck? Like, was I really that bad? You know? Cause I don't, you know, obviously I don't try to parade myself around as being like, you know, the best, you know, but I know what I'm doing. I feel like.
Like,
you
a,
know,
like a plus 10.
there was a you know, a really good book by my, I have a friend, actually I have two friends that were former porn stars in the business.
Oh, wow.
You know,
that's a good job. Yeah,
you've probably heard of Sterling Cooper.
I have.
Sterling's a good dude. And then also, there's another guy named Eric Everhard, right? Eric's a friend of mine. Eric wrote a book called Unleash Your Sexual Superpowers, and it was phenomenal if you wanted to get better at that. But unfortunately, the publisher he went with went out of business, and they own the rights to his book, and so he can't get it republished. So he's like fighting right now to try to get the ownership back of his own IP. It's kind of a sticky situation, but
damn, that's weird. I wonder why he can't just buy it back.
Well, because they got locked up in their shutdown.
Shouldn't they, like, don't they need money? Oh, wait, so you can't buy property from
a
company?
Well, they're gone. The company dissolved. So
that's what I'm saying. The company's gone.
But, like, where did it go then? It just dissolved with the company? Like, it's just gone forever?
Essentially, they shredded ownership papers.
What?
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah, it's just a weird legal thing. And I think it's a publishing company out of the UK or something. But I don't know how that all works. All I know is he's got another book that's, he's trying to release. It's called The Tao of Eating Pussy. And, he sent me an early copy of that, but he's still shopping publishers for that one. But phenomenal books if you really want to get better at that sort of thing.
Very nice.
It's always good to learn more. We're up on our time here. I just wanted to thank you so much for coming and you know, talking to us. You took your time to be on our show. And that really means a lot. And we learned a lot tonight.
Yes, sir. We really appreciate you bringing on your advice, your energy. Like everything you talked about tonight really just resonated with both of us pretty deeply. We just want to thank you so much. We're going to be linking all in the description below. We're going to be linking all the books that he discussed this evening. We're also going to be linking, obviously, his social media, YouTube, and all that. So you can check him out. Very, very inspirational man. He's great. I mean, you heard it all tonight, everyone.
A master and a guru.
A master and a guru. I would say so. Well, anyway, Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show with us today. Is there anything you want to leave with our viewers?
No, if you guys want to tune into my podcast, if you guys are podcast listeners,
we
have new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's called the Come On Man podcast. So just check that out. It's on YouTube and all the other platforms that you find podcasts.
Very, very nice. Well, we'll link all that in the description below. Everyone, thank you so much for watching with us. Once again, let's hear it for Paul for coming on the show tonight. We appreciate all the knowledge you brought us tonight. We're going to be on Patreon soon. Please subscribe to our Spotify as well as our YouTube channel. And we will catch you all on the next episode.